today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by Udo's Choice and their Super 8 Gold Microbiotic. Udo's Choice supports digestive health, heart health, and brain function with their microbiotic and omega oil supplement ranges. When the balance of good versus bad bacteria in the gut gets disrupted by modern diet, stress, disease, medications, traveler's bug, or drinking alcohol, the level of good bacteria can be greatly reduced. Super 8 Gold is a high-potency probiotic blend containing 8 different beneficial bacteria to populate the entire digestive tract, and it has 102 billion good bacteria per capsule, which is the highest strength on the Irish market. I'd recommend Super 8 Gold if you have any digestive concerns such as IBS. You probably heard me talking about Super 8 and Super 8 Gold on my Instagram stories. I've been taking Super 8 Gold for at least a year now, and I take one capsule every day, and I find that it's just incredible for my digestion. Any bloat that I used to get in my stomach is more or less gone, and I found that my immune system is greatly supported just down to putting back in the good bacteria into my stomach. Super 8 and Super 8 Gold are 100% sugar-free and free from additives, artificial colorings, and flavorings, and they're suitable for vegetarians. I'd recommend a probiotic to anybody looking to boost their general health, and I'd recommend the Udo's Choice range to anybody. Can't recommend them enough. I've been using them for years, way before they've came onto the podcast, and I will continue to use them long after because they're incredible. You can find Udo's Choice Super 8 in the fridge section of your local health food store or pharmacy, or online at udoschoice.ie. If you're looking to find out more about the Udo's Choice range, get some information on the benefits of good fats, or just get some new healthy recipes, go to udoschoice.ie and follow them on Instagram at udoschoiceIRL. Quick introduction to today's episode with my guest, Scott Bapty. This is Scott's second time on the podcast, and when we were talking at the very beginning, I thought it was about 7 or 8 months ago, but it was actually way longer than that. It was about a year and a half ago, because Scott was actually one of the first guests that I brought on. I'd been following him for years. He was friends with my sister, who works as a lecturer in Northumbria University, and she had met Scott at a conference. He's a master's in sports nutrition, and she was working in that area and field as well, and kind of connected the two of us. And I've been following Scott for years because he used to be a professional fitness model and shot photos and covers with Men's Health and Men's Fitness. That's actually where I kind of found out about him first, back 7 or 8 years ago, and then we got connected through my sister. And he has a new book out, 101 Ways to Lose Weight and Never Find It Again. Amazing title. He sent me a copy on PDF, and I'll have hopefully the physical copy by the time this episode goes out. And it's such an easy read in the sense that it's broken into short, concise, 101 chapters effectively on how to go through the misconceptions that there is in nutrition, training, mindset, creating the right habits, making sure you're doing the right process, and not getting caught with fad diets or any lack of evidence-based approaches that may be being pushed out there on social media or on different websites, etc. So some of the things we talked about, and we jumped back and forth, the keto diet for fat loss and weight loss. So some of you have been listening to the podcast for a while. You know my approach to keto, that it works very effectively for ultra-endurance athletes, etc. But in the sense of fat loss and weight loss, because of, from an adherence standpoint and its restriction standpoint, it can be very difficult to sustain over a long period of time. And we talked about Scott's background with that as someone that has that master's in nutrition and has a very evidence-based approach. He's one of the people I talk to regularly about the upcoming studies or any recent studies that have been done, because he's very in the weeds with that, so he's able to provide a lot of value to anyone that follows his content, or for anyone like me who's in his network, where we can connect and talk around certain ideas such as hormone optimization and how it doesn't really work when it comes to nutrition unless you have some form of pre-existing medical condition. We talked about juice cleanses and detox diets, particularly this time of year, And I did an episode last week on fat loss traps and how not to get pulled into a bar or juice diet or a detox diet as such that isn't grounded in a calorie deficit with whole quality nutrient-dense foods. By all means, do a detox, drink more water, cut out any alcohol, but you don't need to do a juice cleanse. We talked fasted cardio myths. Diet drinks versus full sugar drinks. That's a really interesting one. We get into that quite early because it's a topic I haven't covered on the podcast in the past. And Scott, with his evidence-based approach, is always going to be one of the best people to speak on the topic. So we talked about he's a believer in diet drinks. I'm not a huge fan of diet drinks, so we had a little bit of a back and forth on that one. And multivitamins, another thing that we not necessarily disagree on, but have different opinions on, because Scott's a huge fan of multivitamins and I'm not. I don't use them personally. So we got into that. And then everything else, weight loss, fat loss, sustainability, etc. So if you are looking to lose weight, if you're looking to lose body fat, if you're looking to improve your mindset, if you're looking to just improve your own knowledge on different diets and different foods, then you're going to love this episode. I've linked out Scott's social media platforms in the show notes on briankeenfitness.com and his new book, 101 Ways to Lose Weight and Never Find It Again. The links are on there as well. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this week's episode where we talk all things nutrition, fitness, weight, and fat loss with my guest, Scott Baptie. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm so excited today to have my guest with me, Scott Baptie. Scott has been on the podcast in the past, so some of you may be familiar with his voice already. I think, Scott, it was about 7 months ago, 7 or 8 months ago, if I'm not mistaken. Do you remember the timeline when you were on first?
I know, but yeah, 7 to 8 months sounds good. You were on mine most recently, I know that. But yeah, I think it was a few months before then that I came on yours.
Yeah, so we had the kind of the similar structure in the sense of what got you into fitness, etc. So we'll talk on that a little bit today. But for everybody listening, just give them a short synopsis on your background because we're going to jump. This is going to be a super valuable episode for anyone that's looking to lose weight, lose body fat. Because Scott, when I think of people that I recommend in terms of when someone goes, who should I follow when I'm trying to lose weight or lose body fat? I'm like, oh, go follow Scott Baptie. I was like, his nutrition stuff, his fitness stuff, go follow him. He puts out some of the best content. Give everybody a little bit of a background and synopsis into your story with health, fitness in general. And then we'll rock and roll back and forth with all things weight loss.
Well, thank you very much for the kind words, Brian. I appreciate it. So, I describe myself as a sports nutritionist, weight loss coach, and now author. I've got a master's degree in applied sports nutrition, and I've worked with quite a few professional athletes, predominantly footballers, and I've done the whole fitness modeling thing as well. I've been on two covers of Men's Health back in the day, and nowadays it's predominantly weight loss that I'm interested in and what I help people with. And yeah, that sort of leads on to the subject of the new book, 101 Ways to Lose Weight and Never Find It Again. But that really is the bread and butter at the moment. It's helping people make small changes that will give them a big return.
Yes, I think that segues perfectly into the book. I love the title, 101 Ways to Lose Weight and Never Find It Again. Talk me through why you wrote this book, who's it for, and just kind of go into the background on where it started and its kind of evolution to being out this week. So for everyone listening, it will be available on Amazon.com. It'll be available on Amazon.co.uk, and we'll be seeding out, and I'll be linking it all in the show notes. But talk us through the origin, where it came from, the idea, and why 101 Ways to Lose Weight.
Well, much like you, when we did English at school, I can't imagine that if someone said, oh yeah, you'll be an author in the future, that you'd be like, oh yeah, that sounds like me, I'm going to be an author. So yeah, it wasn't something that I really planned initially, but people kept on saying, oh, you know, would you write a book? And because my approach is generally sort of no BS, and I try and cut through all the fads and give people like simple advice that is actually based on evidence and is not ridiculously pseudoscientific or reactionary or just filled with nonsense like I think people are getting bombarded with all the time. So if you look at the books out there in the weight loss sphere, a lot of them are pretty terrible. I mean, we don't want to get off on the theme of bad-mouthing the competitors, but a lot of books are quite sensational in that they talk about a certain food being the cause of all weight gain, and the whole book's about how to eliminate that one food from your diet, or it'll be focusing on like the keto diet, which is extremely restrictive, or some form of dieting. So it's all this idea of short-term fixes, and often they'll have like a date on the book, like 7-day plan, 20-day plan, 30-day plan or whatever. And it's this idea of, okay, make some extreme changes for 30 days or whatever, lose the weight, and then who cares what happens afterwards. So that's not really my message. And I found that quite annoying. And I think it's quite frustrating for people as well. So the book isn't a set methodology or set way or set diet. It focuses on habit formation instead of eat this food for 30 days and then do whatever you like after. It's about creating enjoyable and sustainable and healthy habits that even once you've lost the weight that you're looking to lose, you'll still want to continue doing it, because it's not something extremely unpleasant like just eat 500 calories from cabbage a day.
That's why I love your message. It's why I resonate so much with it. And people listening to the podcast will have heard me say that the best diet is one that fits into your lifestyle and schedule, includes foods that you enjoy, that's in alignment with your goals. And that's been your message for as long as I've been following you and for as long as I've known you. And that's why I love your brackets and never find it. 101 ways to lose weight and never find it again, because that's all sustainability. I'm going to jump back and forth. You mentioned the keto diet there, and I want to catch on this one a little bit early, because this is January now. This is going to be the diet that people are talking about for the next 3, 4, or 5 weeks, because it was already gaining popularity towards the back end of 2018. Talk me through your thoughts on the keto diet. I kind of have my opinions and we can ebb and flow on it, but what are your thoughts with the keto diet in the sense of, there'll be definitely a few people listening, a couple, maybe one or two, maybe a couple of hundred, maybe a couple of thousand, that are like, I think I'm going to do keto this month. Before you do keto, go get Scott's book. But what's your thought with the keto diet?
So if you don't like eating carbohydrates, and if you don't plan on ever having crisps, cake, bread, pasta, or anything carb-rich in the future, keto diet is for you. I have no idea how many people would put their hands up and go, yeah, yeah, legit, I really hate things like birthday cake and crisps and bread. So that's the general, the whole thing again with keto diet, right? The keto diet, it's suggesting it's short term. And the reason why the keto diet works is it's just another low to zero carb diet. And it doesn't work because carbohydrates are bad. It works because when you make a huge reduction from the macronutrient being carbohydrates, you generally consume less calories as a result. It's the same reason that old school, you know, low fat diets work. Why do they work? Because you're getting less calories from fat equals less calories overall, calorie deficit, you lose weight. It's the same thing with keto. There's nothing really about it that is a secret hack or does some wizard, you know, hormone optimization or anything like this. It simply works because if you eat less carbohydrates, you'll eat less calories. As a result of eating less calories, you'll lose weight. Now, if you look at the studies on this, when you match a diet and you match it for calories and you keep protein consistent, low carb dieting doesn't win. Like, it's essentially, it comes down to this, the same. If you're matching protein and your and calories are the same, a low carb versus high carb diet, the outcome is much and such the same from a weight loss perspective. So it isn't any more advantageous. The big thing though, if you look again at which diets work and which approaches work and so on, the most important thing is sustainability. And that is the huge thing, is adherence. So if, again, like I said, you don't mind not eating carbohydrates and you don't like carb-rich foods, then yeah, the keto diet might work for you and you might adhere to it. But for most of us, it's not representative of our normal style of eating. Like, we do eat a predominantly carb-rich diet because carbs are tasty and it's just part of our culture and foods we enjoy to eat. So to say you're not eating carbohydrates is very different to what you do at the moment. And again, it's unlikely you're going to stick to it. So that's why my approach is, well, yeah, go for it if you think you'll stick with it, but it's unlikely that you will. So let's just avoid it and let's just lose weight by, rather than saying no carbs, let's just control our carb intake and maybe pay attention to the type of carbohydrates we're eating. So if we're eating, if lots of our carbs are coming from highly refined, really processed sources, sweets, crisps, biscuits, and so on, let's see if we can make a swap to root vegetables, whole grains, simple things. So we're saying pay attention to the quality and the portion size as opposed to saying go cold turkey.
Yeah, I think that message is so good. You said a word there that I've mentioned regularly on the podcast, adherence. At the end of the day, when it comes to weight loss or comes to fat loss or body compositional change, adherence is key. What can you stick to long term and sustain long term? And the keto diet, it's one of those, Scott, that really splits me 50-50, because if you're an endurance and an ultra endurance athlete, I'm like, yeah, definitely mess around with keto. Like, it's worth giving yourself a energy source that may feel unlimited when compared to, say, glucose or glycogen store, where you've got to load up glycogen when you're doing, you know, 50 or 100 kilometer run. But to lose weight and to get your body fat down, it's so restrictive. And I had a girl message me on DM recently. She's like, yeah, I'm doing the keto diet now. And I'm like, okay, well, how many calories are you eating? She goes, oh, I don't know. I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm like the chance of doing keto, and this can go both ways, because if you're eating such high fat foods, you're the calorie density, you're just going to be getting more calories from those fat, from high fat foods. It could potentially put you into a surplus, which means you're not going to lose weight anyway. So it's one of those that I wanted to touch on, because there will definitely be somebody listening who's like, okay, maybe I won't do keto. Do you have any, talk us through some of the 101 samples. So there's 101 in there. I was flicking through the book this morning. Like, it looks class. I love the structure. It's really easily to digest. Talk people through the structure of the book and give us some samples of 101 ways to lose weight. Some of your personal favorites.
Right. Well, out of the 101 ways, there's nutrition ones, there's exercise ones, and there's mindset and motivation. And the idea of the book is you don't start it at the beginning and finish it at the end. You just dip in and out of it. Like we mentioned offline, it's the kind of thing you might read when you're having a poop, you know, you're just looking for something to have a read of. And it's that kind of idea. You dip in and out of it. It's important to realize as well that we lose weight when we create a calorie deficit. So we need to consume less calories than we're burning. And that's the whole premise of the book, that the habits will either help you increase the calories you burn or decrease the calories you eat. There's nothing unique about the habits, and that there's no, again, magic pills or wizardry. It's all things that will help you create this calorie deficit. So I suppose one of my favorite ways, and we've already really touched upon it, is the very first chapter, which is called Ditch the Diet Mentality. And it's trying to set people up to realize that this short-term 6 pounds in 6 days and so on, it doesn't work. We need to realize that we want to make long-term changes and things that are sustainable and we actually like, so we don't have crazy rebounds and go back to, you know, the old style of eating that we did that made us unhappy with our weight in the first place. So that's one of the important ones. I suppose some of the favorite ones that I like, now you've put me on the spot, probably the ones that challenge beliefs and make people think, oh, I thought everybody knew that was the thing I had to do, or I thought everybody knew that was bad. So I suppose one of the chapters looks at diet drinks. And I think we might have spoken about this before. It's a subject that I seem to always be getting involved in arguments with. And people think, oh, surely I should just have a full sugar Coca-Cola or Iron Brew if you're over here, because the diet version is full of chemicals and it's carcinogenic and it's really bad for you. And that's just a total myth that won't go away. So that's a simple thing you can do. If you consume a lot of liquid calories from fizzy drinks, making a simple swap to like the zero calorie version is an easy way that could slash your calories. I mean, I mentioned this in the book. Say you have like a 500 ml bottle of fizzy juice every day. If you swap that for the no added sugar version, that's 2000 calories you've just saved per week, making such a small change. Like all you've done is you've just, rather than bought the full sugar one, you bought the diet one. You're still getting a drink. It's still tasty, but you've just cut 2000 calories out your diet like that. So yeah, that's an easy one.
Let's pull on that one just before we get into it, the next one. You made a really good point there, and I'm going to pull back because I know you're a huge fan of Iron Brew. But the diet drinks, because that's one that people listen to, and I haven't spoken a lot on the podcast in the past. And I've been reading a lot of the research on the sweeteners. Again, a lot of the stuff disproven that, you know, that they're not necessarily bad, or they can't be proved that they're carcinogenic or bad right now. Because when I think of the evidence-backed approach, you're one of the names that I always bring up, because you always have evidence-backed approach to everything that you do and a very scientific background with your master's, etc. Talk people through the, if they're listening here going, no, diet drinks are bad, and that's the statement that comes to their mind, what would you say to somebody that has that thought process?
First of all, you have to think, why am I saying this? It's not just based on, oh, because everyone knows, or, oh, I'm sure it's bad. It's the same idea of, oh, everybody knows you can't eat carbs after six. It's just one of these myths that won't disappear. Now, if you look at the evidence, so research studies, there's even meta-analysis done, which are studies of other studies. So the subjects are, I mean, the sample population is huge. They consistently show that in moderation, this diet drinks aren't carcinogenic, they're not toxic. I mean, these are the buzzwords that are used. The people that dispute this, it's generally blogs, it's like opinions, or people posting up a study that was actually done in rats. And if you look at the human equivalent of it, it's the equivalent of like 300 cans of juice per day, every day for a month. So it's, one, it's not relevant. If it's in rats, these findings don't always translate to humans. And two, the quantities are just not even possible for us to consume. I mean, trying to do 300 cans of juice, it's not going to happen. And you have to look at the actual evidence. So we know that if we consume a diet high in refined sugar, it's probably not a good idea. But making this simple swap for a diet drink is an easy change. And sometimes, again, you'll see people saying, oh, well, people who are overweight are more likely to drink Diet Cokes, therefore the Diet Cokes cause the weight gain. This doesn't happen. Yes, if you look at the research, overweight people may drink more diet drinks, but that's not the problem. That's not what caused the weight gain in the first place. That's just a correlation. So I don't know how else you can phrase it, Brian, unless you just say it's, honestly, if you're consuming a couple of cans of juice a day, you're absolutely fine at the moment. I mean, this is what the majority of evidence is showing us. This may change in the future. If new studies come out to disprove it, it would seem unlikely because so many studies have been done on this.
You made an amazing point there that I want to pull back on. And it's funny because everything there with the evidence-based approach is one of the reasons why I love talking to you about these topics, is questioning why do you think that way, which I think can come back to everything. When you're going to, say, a mindless approach, and when I say mindless, it's the, well, this is what I've been told, this is what everybody says, they're the things you need to question. If somebody says to you, oh, you should have diet drinks, or you shouldn't have diet drinks, or you should have full sugar drinks, or you shouldn't have full sugar drinks, ask the question why. And it's like, well, that's because that's what everybody says. That is the grounds for just letting things mindlessly happen. And if you're randomly doing things, not questioning what decisions you're making, you're going to get random results off the back of that. In terms of diet drinks, again, I can argue as much on both sides. I try not to drink them at all, like, just because personally I'm like, oh, I'll try and stick with water. But the diet drinks are definitely
the better alternative to sugar, like in terms of calories, in terms of inflammation, etc. From anything that I've read from a study, from an evidence-backed approach. On the next one for 101 ways to lose weight, is there any other one that jumps to mind outside of the fizzy drinks?
Yes. Let me actually look at the index. I'm trying to pick a really good one. I'm like, boom, let's just drop that one in.
There's so many good ones in there. I was flicking through it this morning and I'm like, I was writing a few down and I'm like, do you know what? I'm just going to ask Scott what one he likes.
I've shot myself in the foot with this because I've said it's the only weight loss book you'll ever need because it's genuinely everything that you could possibly need to know at the moment. Again, evidence, science and studies may come out to prove otherwise, but at the moment it's everything you need to lose weight. So yeah, in my opinion, it's all good, but I suppose it's what habit is most relevant to you. So that's what I try and tell people is don't pick something if it sounds terrible. Like we mentioned in it, flexible dieting and tracking macros. If you don't want to log your foods, that's fine. Don't pick that habit. If you aren't able to lift weights, if it's just something you're not interested in or you are injured or whatever, don't follow the habits that talk about progressive overload and supersets and so on. You just pick the ones that are relevant to you. I suppose one brand that again is relevant at this time of year when people are looking for that quick fix in the diet and so on is the old juice cleanse, which always comes in when people are like, oh, I've had too much drink at the week over the Christmas period. I better go on a juice cleanse or a detox. Like this is also a pretty stupid idea because first off, if you have a liver and a set of kidneys, you already have everything you need to do to detox. And when people think you need to go on a diet, just drinking superfoods, it's again, it's not realistic. Unless you only drink juice normally, don't go on a juice detox. The weight loss happens because you've created a huge calorie deficit. If you're only just having some juices, you're eating or drinking hardly any calories. What happens? You lose weight. Then what happens when you start eating food again? Well, because it's been so restrictive, you start going back to normal eating and you gain a load of weight as a result. So yeah, avoid doing a juice detox. It's your body doesn't have a load of toxins that you need to get rid of by having some chia seeds and spinach in a shake.
Yeah, it's so true. Which is funny because in the juice cleanse world, like there's some truth in the sense that yeah, chia seeds are great for you, spinach is really good for you, just don't have it as a juice cleanse and cut out food for 2 weeks trying to detox. With the, you said something there that I want to pull out, and just because when I think juice cleanse, sometimes people associate that with hormone optimization. When I say the word hormone optimization, what comes to your mind and why?
Mate, I think you're talking out your arse when it's talking about your hormone optimization. Or not you. When I hear this, right? The only people that need to manipulate their hormones are if they have a medical condition that requires them to do so. For example, if you're a diabetic or if you have an issue with your thyroid. Trying to manipulate your hormones is... it's not how you lose weight. It's people trying to be clever and focus on things that aren't relevant to them, or they're obsessing on an individual approach as opposed to looking at the underlying principles of how it works. I'm using keto as an example. People start going on, oh yeah, I've got low insulin levels and high insulin equals weight gain because it's a storage hormone. And if I have low insulin levels, then I'll end up burning fat and so on. No, the reason why the keto diet works is because of the calorie deficit. So again, I keep harping this message through in the book that you want to be able to finish it and realize. And it helps you be more critical of things. So if somebody says, oh, this food helps you burn fat, you go, wait, hang on, how can it help me burn fat? There's no such thing as a fat burning property that actually has a significant impact. Okay, there are some studies that show green tea, cayenne pepper, capsicums and so on may slightly elevate your metabolic rate, but it's so insignificant, you're not going to be able to measure it. So there isn't such thing as a fat burning food. It's all quantities. So hopefully when you read the book, you'll be able to understand, yeah, how you lose weight. It's calorie deficit. It's the old basics of consume less calories than you burn. But obviously that's the principle. We just need to find a way that's enjoyable and easy and sustainable for us to do it. And that isn't trying to manipulate hormones.
I had to ask that question because I don't know, was it a Facebook Live or an Instagram story? I saw you talking about it and I'm like, I'm definitely getting Scott to repeat that on the podcast just because it's worded better than any way I could word it. I think it's spot on. And that's why, like, it's a totally loaded question because I knew what you were going to say. Because of the way the book was written, obviously 101 Ways to Lose Weight, you've seen so many misconceptions over the years. We've talked on a couple of them earlier, the keto, juice cleanse, detoxification, hormone optimization, etc. Is there any other misconceptions, and I'm sure you've addressed it in the book as well, one that you see on a very regular basis or get asked a lot on social media? What are the kind of the one or two, maybe even three misconceptions that are consistently popping up from your side of the world?
Yeah, fasted cardio is still around, or I don't know if it's making a resurgence. But the idea that if you do cardio on an empty stomach in the morning, it's better from a fat burning perspective compared to later in the day. And you can see the logic of why this would make sense, because you think, right, I've not eaten anything. Therefore, in order to give me the energy, I'm going to use stored body fat. But if you, again, you look at the studies in this, if you burn 300 calories in the morning versus 300 calories at 4 p.m., at the end of the day, you've still burned 300 calories doing exercise. And fasted cardio, again, looking at the studies, it's not shown to be any better. Like, the rates of fat loss are pretty much exactly the same compared to training at 1 p.m., 3 p.m., midnight, whenever. So the best time of day to train is the best time that works for you. And if that happens to be fasted because you just like waking up and going to the gym, that's fine. But if you think, oh no, I didn't go to the gym on an empty stomach, right, there's no point in me going because it's not as good from a fat loss perspective. Again, that is flawed. So again, I'm trying to emphasize how you lose weight. It comes down to calories in, calories out. So that's one. Another one is still around meal timing and meal frequency. How often should I eat? How many meals? Should I eat three big meals, three small meals? Should I fast? Should I, not eat carbs after six? Again, it doesn't matter, because if you eat 2000 calories by doing it in two meals of 1000 calories for a breakfast, 1000 calories for a dinner, or you do it in four meals of 500 calories each, it's still 2000 calories by the end of the day. So I think when people read this and realize it, it does make sense. I mean, people know this, they go, oh yeah, that totally makes sense, I can understand. I think it's the problem is when the media and messages and social media and so on are just confusing, and people try and promote their own agenda and their own approach because it's the basics that work, but basics aren't that sexy. So yeah, there we go. That's me having a little rant.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that's it's very easy to push the next big thing or the silver bullet, because, again, I remember not so much in the last 10, even 12 years, but when I was 18, 19, I remember you wanted to believe that there was a silver bullet. There was a supplement, or there was a workout, or there was a certain food you could eat that would get you ripped or help you lose body fat or help you build muscle. And it's kind of just a cognitive bias that we have. We kind of, part of us want to believe that it's true, even though the old adage, if it sounds too good to be true, it generally is. But as you said, the basics, calorie deficit, nutrient dense foods, it's not sexy. It doesn't sell.
Yeah. Move more.
Yeah, move more. You know, it's not, it's a lot easier to sell this supplement or sell, you know, this new diet, or, you know, the certain things are taking a resurgence. As you said, the fasted cardio, which, again, people listening to the podcast, I would have had that spoken about it several times before, that it doesn't matter when you do your cardio, calorie deficit for weight loss, fat loss. What are your thoughts on fasting? And the reason I ask this is
I've been experimenting with intermittent fasting for about a year now, and it was actually in the lead up to the Sahara run, the Marathon de Sable, to try and condition myself to do better without food. What are your thoughts on fasting, intermittent fasting? Have you experienced any experience with it? Have you experimented with it yourself? And just what is your general thoughts on it?
Yeah, I am not against fasting at all. In fact, there's a chapter in the book called Fast Track Fat Burning with a Fast. But again, it's just another method to create a calorie deficit. So if it works for you, go for it. That's why I like it, because sometimes people have followed it and say, yeah, I've tried eating small meals frequently or breakfast, lunch and dinner, and it didn't work. I've started fasting and as a result, I've lost weight. I feel great. I'm still eating the same kind of foods. Then that is fair play to you. Go for it. But again, people need to understand the mechanisms, the physiological mechanisms behind fasting and how it works. And when you limit the amount of food you eat for a set period, you generally will consume less calories. And as a result of consuming less calories, what happens? Calorie deficit, you lose weight. There we go. Again, it's nothing more than that. It's not because you have greater insulin sensitivity. It's not because of any other, I mentioned in the book, hormone optimizing wizardry. It's because you eat less. So if it is a habit that will help you eat less and you don't feel hungry and your mood is fine and you don't overeat when you move into that eating window, go for it. Again, it's just another tool that you can use, but you need to understand how it works.
Yeah, that's very kind of similar to what I've spoken about on the podcast in the past, that if you're only eating for 8 hours during the day, there's a good chance that you're probably going to eat less food than if you're eating for 16 hours during the day. That just kind of makes sense from a mathematical standpoint. What's your diet like yourself at the minute? How are you eating? Are you still doing a lot of slow cooker stuff? What's your nutrition like yourself at the minute, Scott?
I would say I'm an intuitive eater, but I'm only at that. I'm only able to do that because of I've got a really good understanding of what's in the food that I'm eating, which has come about through making all the mistakes and following a meal plan or tracking macros and so on. I've done all those approaches. So now I just eat to satisfy hunger. I make sure I'm eating nutrient-dense foods most of the time. I cook pretty much everything from scratch. I'll have breakfast, I have lunch, I have dinner, and I put in a few snacks, again, roundabout training and throughout the day, again, to manage hunger. But yeah, it's fairly straightforward. Like you mentioned, slow cooker at this time of year, do a lot of slow cooker, a lot of stews and casseroles and so on. I really love cooking. I suppose that's an advantage. If you don't like cooking, it is harder to do and you maybe get a bit bored eating the same things. But there's so many tasty recipes out there. There isn't really an excuse for getting bored of eating the same thing. You just need to go and find another recipe that's easy for you and has the foods in it that you enjoy. So yeah, I'd say I'm an intuitive eater, but 80-20 rule, mate. 80% eat the nutrient dense quality whole foods. 20% will be whatever unhealthy shite I fancy. So, you know, advent calendars. I wouldn't, you know, eat an advent calendar as a snack, but you know what I mean.
That's the secret. Hormone optimization and advent calendars.
Yeah, I'm on the advent calendar diet. All I do is eat an advent calendar every day. Which, to be fair, for me, I would probably lose. If I a whole advent calendar, yeah, I would lose weight every day because how many calories do you think is in an advent calendar?
That's a good point. 100,000? Yeah, probably the same. Yeah, that's...
Anyway, yeah, but the reason I'd lose weight was because of the calorie deficit, not because I ate an advent calendar. But one, quite like habits as well. So people often ask about drinking. I don't know why, but it seems to be people are really interested when I do Facebook Lives or anything about my drinking habits. And I'll say, well, I don't drink during the week. But come Friday, Saturday, possibly Sunday, I'll have a couple of beers. We might open a bottle of wine, might have a wee whiskey. It's just, I don't drink to excess. I can't remember the last time I was smashed. Well, to be fair, I can actually. It was my best mate's stag do, but I think that was like 4 years ago. But yeah, I don't drink to excess. I just have a couple of beers and you can do that. Have a couple of beers or a couple of glasses of wine or eat any food as part of a healthy diet, so long as you're not taking it to excess. I love beer. like craft beers. I'm really into my wine as well. I've actually done a few wine tasting courses and stuff, as pretentious as that sounds. But I also love whiskies. I like it all, mate. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's the thing with alcohol, isn't it? It's just I've been drinking a lot of wine myself. I'm like, oh, I might look into some courses. That could be very problematic, though. I have quite an addictive personality. I think I'm probably better to not go down that route.
It's the best homework ever.
Yeah, I can imagine. Outside of the book, which is massively going to take up so much of your thinking time, etc., at the minute, what are you most excited about right now, either in fitness, health, or personal life, or outside of it? What are you most excited about at the minute?
I'm really excited about summer. I know it sounds ridiculous, but we moved house in August, so I've not really seen much of the summer at this new house, and we're out in the country, and I love being outside, and that is something that is really underrated. I remember I did a podcast years ago with Kamal Patel, who's like the top guy at examine.com, who writes all about supplements and everything. And his biggest take-home health tip was get outside and get more sunshine. And yeah, that's what I'm most excited about. I know it's not very interesting, but I'm excited for summer. I want to get outside. I love getting my steps in, on tracking my Fitbit. I like playing golf. I like working in the garden. We've got like these huge vegetable patch here that I've got to, one, learn how to grow things, and two, get growing. So that's what I'm most excited about, is summer.
Well, there's very few things that are going to be better than that. You mentioned examine.com, and the last time you were on the podcast, you brought up, I think, examine.com as one of your favorite resources for supplements. Am I right in saying that, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, that would be definitely something I would say.
Yeah, that's one that I remember off the back of that podcast, a lot of people messaged about, and I actually started using it a lot more from your recommendation. Is there any supplements you're using yourself at the minute?
The same that I've been using, mate, for about the last 4 years. Multivitamin, omega-3, vitamin D, but again, vitamin D is seasonal. I take it generally October to March, and creatine. And then I don't really class protein as a supplement as such. I just include it as part of my diet, as in a protein powder. So I'll have a scoop in the morning when I'm having my breakfast, and then possibly again after exercise, but it depends on when I'm exercising. That if I'm just about to have my dinner, I won't, but if it's sort of middle of the day, then I will. So yeah, multivitamin, omega-3, vitamin D, and creatine.
Talk to me about a multivitamin, because I'm on the school of thought, from a personal standpoint, this isn't, this is very context dependent, but from my own personal standpoint, I don't use a multivitamin because I've never been convinced fully of the benefits from the nutrition that I'm eating. Now, that's not a standalone rule. Like, there's people listening, I'm like, 100%, that's the first supplement you should get. Why do you take a multivitamin, and what's your reason for it? Because it was the first one you mentioned there. Why is it a foundation pillar in your supplement plan?
So, interesting. There was actually a study done that people who take multivitamins live less, which you think, well, hang on, I'm not going to take one. But for me, as much as I talk about having a nutrient-dense diet and encouraging people to do so, I am shamefully somewhat fussy when it comes to vegetables. So I don't eat nearly enough varied veg as I would like to, but it's purely just from a taste preference. So to cover my bases, that's why I take a multivitamin. Also, if you look at some studies, there was one done in athletes who had a diet prescribed by a dietitian. They were on average about six nutrients, deficient in about six nutrients, even though they were eating a very good varied diet. So for me, I just call it an insurance policy. But yeah, that's the reason why I take that.
Yeah, that's, I'm glad that's the answer on it. Again, it's so context dependent, but I'm always curious when someone is schooled up and as educated on the topic as you is personally using it, especially because I eat ridiculous amounts of vegetables. Like, I'm all but vegan with meat, in the sense that every meal has got ridiculous amounts of vegetables. I love it. I love the way it makes me feel. My energy levels are so much better with it. And I that was my school of thought from multivitamin, but I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something there. Is there anything that
you're very randomly into at the minute. So at the I go through phases, and I know you're kind of similar because of some of the posts you put up on Instagram. At the minute, I'm like obsessed on World War II. I've been like World War II in color on Netflix. I've been literally, I watched The Darkest Hour by the Winston Churchill movie recently. I've been obsessed with World War II for the last couple of weeks. Is there anything that you're like really randomly into at the minute?
Western horse riding.
Oh, do explain. Expand on that, please.
So, yeah, we've got two horses, and I learned how to ride horses in America. So it's a Western setup. So it's different from English riding. Your saddle's different. Generally, it's just more comfortable. And yeah, we've got a couple of horses here. So we try and go out in them at the moment at least once a week, but when the weather gets better, we'll be going out in them more. And I just really like it. It's a good way, again, getting outside. It's a workout because you're constantly using your core to maintain your balance and stay upright. And I'm always sore afterwards. It's a way to spend more time with my wife. And it's just fun. I just like it. We're not going like tearing around fields, but we just sort of go through the forest and trekking and go through water and streams, and it's just fun and I really like it. But yeah, when it comes into summer, the next thing I'll be back into the gardening, because I love when we stay in the city, we just have a little garden, but now, like I said, we've got the vegetable patch and greenhouse and so on. I'm ready to get into hopefully eating more veg, because if I grow it myself, one, it'll be tastier. Two, I know where it's from. And three, I want to have that sense of satisfaction of this soup is 100% my garden. So yeah, that's the plan.
You'll have to start growing your own grapes and the wine and the whole lot as well, and just be completely self-sufficient. Yeah, well,
I've had a mate, we've got berries and stuff, and the boys were like, oh, you could make a heap of gins with this. I'm like, yeah, possibly.
I love it. What's your training like at the minute then? Are you still doing gym-based stuff? Are you still playing volleyball? How is that looking in terms of your training routine? You're still supplemented with creatine, so that leads me to believe that you're obviously still doing enough conditioning work. What's your training regimen like at the minute?
Yeah, so I train a lot less than I used to train, but at the moment I'm into a 3-day-a-week routine, upper, lower, and then a full body routine. And then I normally have like a little swim afterwards and then cool down, that kind of thing. Play volleyball quite a lot for cardio, so about 2-3 times a week. And religiously get my 10,000 steps in, which again is easier because we have a dog, so we have to take her out anyway. But yeah, it's all stuff I enjoy. Sometimes if I don't feel like going to the gym, I won't. But every day I'll get 10,000 steps without fail.
When you're getting your 10,000 steps, because that's something that even I struggle with myself, I'm very fortunate even where I live. I live in the most beautiful place in the middle of a valley. But getting the 10,000 steps can be difficult. When you're getting that in, do you listen to podcasts, listen to audiobooks? Do you just kind of stay mindful on what you're doing? Because you're clearly walking a lot, do you have any kind of hacks in between that kill some of that dead time?
Yeah, well, chapter 2 in the book, walk off the weight with a step tracker. But use the downtime. Like I'll make calls when I'm out for a walk. So if it's like a work call, if it's like an interview, I've done podcasts when I've been out walking before. I'll use that time to sort of have a call or listen to podcasts. But I think also just to be present is quite important too, to just actually appreciate, especially if you're walking in the country or in the woods or somewhere nice, is just to actually enjoy the sound of nature, not being on your phone. Like leave your phone in the car at the house, so you don't take it out and you play on it. Just be present and be grateful and be thankful that you can actually go out for a walk unhindered and enjoy it and feel safe.
Yeah, I think some form of digital detox is really important. Whatever structure or whatever system that looks like for each person. For example, I normally have one day a week that's a complete digital detox where my phone, I don't even have it on me, which feels weird because it feels like an attachment to you at times. But going for a walk, particularly if you're in nature, leaving your phone behind or having a day during the week or even in the evening where you just put your phone aside and you're not flicking through Instagram, can be really helpful for just your mental health. Talk me through Instagram. You put up a post
post recently, was it McDonald's, where you got a massive amount, I remember laughing because I understood the context, but for those listening, was it a McDonald's post or Burger King?
Was it McDonald's versus Pret A Manger?
That was it. That was the one. And I laughed so much. For everybody listening that's unfamiliar with that, talk me through that and the reaction of the people that were following you off the back of that.
So I quite like posting things on Instagram that wind people up. Not my fault. I kind of like winding up the quote unquote clean eaters, or people who have just are so dogmatic about their nutrition approach. I sometimes like to push their buttons a little bit. And this post was, it was just one of those fairly standard compare the calories of this versus this. And what I used an example was a Pret A Manger meal. So it was like a chicken avocado sandwich, veggie crisps, and a smoothie, compared to McDonald's, which was a McChicken sandwich, Coke Zero, and a medium fries. And it was showing that McDonald's had fewer calories than the Pret. And that was all it was saying, was just like, well, the message of the post was, even though something is marketed as being healthier, which of course the Pret is. I mean, there's more fruits and veggies in it. It's way more nutrient dense. There's more fiber and it's not deep fried. It's obvious that there are more nutritional benefits to be had from that meal compared to the McDonald's. But from a weight loss perspective, just because something is marketed as healthy doesn't mean it's low calorie. You still have to be mindful of how many calories are in the healthy food. Like nuts are an example of, somebody said, oh yeah, I've swapped out the crisps for the nuts. But then it turns out that they're eating, 500 calorie bag of nuts, whereas they were just eating 150 calorie packet of crisps. So you still need to be mindful. Anyway, the minority didn't get this and lost their shit and were going, oh, you're misleading, and oh, somebody's like, oh, no wonder the health system's in the state it is because of this kind of advice. And just total reactionary stuff that they just completely missed the point of it. And yeah, so I had to do a rebuttal video being like, I'm amazed I'm having to do this, but that post was solely about calories. And yes, there's more to health than calories, but for weight loss, you still need to pay attention to it.
That's one of the things I struggle with the most on social media, Instagram in particular, compared to the reason I love the podcast, that you can give a little bit more context and expansion on whatever the idea is, where Instagram, if it's a story, it's 10, 15 seconds. If it's a post, it's whatever the word count is and the visual, and a lot of context gets lost. Like, I laughed because some of your reactions were brilliant to it as well. And I laughed because I'm like, that's not what he meant.
Yeah. But thankfully, my following were pretty good and they were all chipping in at me like, mate, that's clearly not what it means, blah, 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 blah. And yeah, I'm glad the people who followed me, they got it, because then it shows that the teachings and the method that I'm putting out or teaching them about, it worked, because then they were able to see exactly the post for what it was meant to be.
How do you deal with any negative feedback that comes your way with that? Like, this is just part and parcel of what we do, me, you, other people that put out our thoughts, our ideas, our philosophies out there for people to see and criticize, etc. And there's a lot of people that are listening to this that would love to do something similar, but kind of have a fear of posting or pressing that play button or whatever it is where they can be judged. When you put out content that either has a negative or a positive feedback, particularly the negative stuff that we can sometimes take to heart, how do you handle that, or how do you deal with it? Do you have a press it, set and forget it, Joe Rogan style, where he posts it and then doesn't look at the phone? Do you have a, where you talk to your inner circle or your wife about what's bothering you? How do you deal with any kind of negativity that whatever come your way anytime that it does? And it's just part and parcel of anybody that puts out posts, because people have opinions. How do you handle it personally?
I generally don't care. It's taken me a while to get there. When I first started out, I was like, oh no, negative comment. Oh, but now I'm like, that the problem isn't me. The problem is with the person. So they are either angry or jealous, or they don't understand the point. It's unlikely, it sounds big headed, but you think of it in that way, that you're not the problem. The problem is with the person who's making the comment. So, and I'm thinking, is this person having any influence in my life? Do I am I trying to please them? Do they shape the decisions I make on a day-to-day basis? Which inevitably is no, of course not. Then you just think, well, who cares? Opinions are like the old adage of opinions are like arseholes. Everybody's got one. And that, if you just remember that, it's most of the time it's one person's opinion. I mean, who cares?
Yeah, I think that's great advice, because everybody listening, whatever you do is out there, it's going to be judged, and everybody has an opinion. And as you said, everybody
another thing to remember is someone more successful than you is never going to bring you down. Yeah, it never happens. Yeah, I'll happily. I mean, I'm not a little dictator on my Instagram page. Like, I don't block people. I don't like just go, oh, well, you're an arsehole. But I love having debate. If it's constructive and if the person is, it's just polite and they say, oh, well, I don't agree with that, or can you give me some evidence for that or whatever, then I'm like, yeah, sure, let's have a chat about it. But when somebody's like, no, you're wrong, you're a dick, then you're like, well, okay, we're not really going to have a constructive dialogue here.
Yeah, well, it's such a great point for anybody listening, because that thought process, that sometimes I'm very similar to you in the sense, Scott, that I love if someone has an opposite opinion to me. It's one of the reasons I asked you about the multivitamin, was because every time someone has an opinion that's different to yours, it's an opportunity to learn something new or learn something from a different vantage point. But there's also the thought process that I live by, that trying to convince someone that can't be convinced or doesn't want to be convinced is like teaching a pig how to fly. And two things happen. One, the pig doesn't learn how to fly, and you just piss off the pig. So it's a case of just be very aware when you're talking to the pig and when you have potential to learn. Yeah. Just to wrap up, because I'm very conscious of time, and the 101 ways to lose weight and never find it again, I'll be linking it in the show notes. Tell everybody listening your last bit from the book that jumps out mindset-wise, nutrition-wise, training-wise, one more of the 101 ways to lose weight. For the rest of them, they can pick them up, and I'll get you to tell everybody the best place to do that. But what's the last one to finish the show on that jumps out in your mind? 101 ways to lose weight, either a nutrition tip, a mindset tip, or a training tip.
One would be focus on the process and not the outcome. So when you focus on this process and not the outcome, you have control. And with process goals, you stop seeing weight loss as a means to an end. Whereas with outcome goals, it might be like, right, I want to lose 15 kilos, and then it becomes an obsessive target and everything you have to do is focus around 15 kilos. But when you focus on process goals, you pay attention to the actions and behaviors and choices and so on that you make, which will result in that outcome goal. So it's the main thing is really to just focus on the habits and things that you're doing over time, which are, it's going to be more fulfilling, less stressful, and it's going to again move you away from this, oh, I gained a pound, or I lost a pound, or I gained a pound, oh my God, it's a nightmare. Just focus on the process and not the outcome.
I love it. I think that's the best approach to nutrition. You know, tell me how you eat every day and I'll tell you how you look in a year. Focus on the process and the results will come on the back end of it. Scott, where is the best place for people to pick up the book? It's out right now. Where's the best place for people to order it, to get it? Stores, online, etc.
Yeah, so rather than trying to spell my name and telling you to put it in Amazon, just go on to www.weightlossbook.co.uk, and then if you go on there, and
how did you get that as the fucking username? How did you get weight loss book as the username?
Or as soon as I thought I was going to have a book, I had a wee glance to see if it was available, and I was amazed, and it actually was. And would you believe it, mate? There's another one, mindsetbook.co.uk, was also available. But I think this was before you'd written your book. So I told a mate of mine who's written a mindset book, I was like, do you know this domain's available for a couple of quid? He's like, bought. So yeah, it was just lucky. I'm amazed nobody got. So yeah, weightlossbook.co.uk. I actually own fatlossbook.co.uk as well. But given that weight's in the title of the book, that's the domain that we've used. So yeah, weightlossbook.co.uk.
That is unbelievable. I cannot believe you got that domain. I will be linking that in the show notes. I'll be linking the Amazon link in there as well, Book Depository, etc. Scott, on social media platforms, where's the best place for people to follow more of your journey?
Anywhere, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, just search for Scott Bapte. As far as I'm aware, there's only a handful of us. So yeah, Bapte, and you'll find me there.
Love it. And I'll be linking all those in the show notes as well on www.briankeenfitness.com. 101 ways to lose weight and never find it again. Scott, thank you so much.
Brian, the pleasure's all mine. Thank you.